Senator Limmer.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail and Sergeant at Arms will be instructed to bring in the absent members. The prayer this morning is being offered by Reverend Bob Hart from the Church of St. Patrick in Invergrove Heights. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Loving God, Blessed Spirit, all-powerful Yahweh, your blessings reach to the ends of the earth. Confirm us in our common task that we may walk together with you and with each other. Bless the men and women gathered here, the senators and staff who have been entrusted with the responsibility of seeing to the well-being of the people of Minnesota. From the abundance of your mercy, enrich them and safeguard them. May all their work be in a spirit of cooperation and be brought to conclusion through your power and guidance. Watch over them and guide them as only you can. Give them the wisdom necessary to make prudential judgments, especially during this time of fiscal uncertainty, and keep them ever mindful of the people they have been elected to serve, particularly those who have so little and depend on those of us who have so much. Then, strengthened by your blessing, may they remember to always be thankful to you and bless you with unending joy. I ask this in the name of the God or Spirit of each person's understanding, whoever or whatever that may be. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Anderson, Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebretson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogemiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Spark, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
The quorum is present. We will move to the second order of business, executive and official communications. There are several printed on today's agenda, and they will be referred as indicated. Please make note of the communication from Senators Koch and Bach that will make a change in the committee membership. Moving on to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move
just
that
a
the
moment.
Committee I would move that the committee reports.
Members, nobody can hear anything. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There are several that are printed in the agenda, second reading. Moving on to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There is one change to the Senate bill introductions on page 4. Senate file number 450 will be referred to taxes instead of energy, utilities, and telecommunications. With that change, the rest, and they will be referred as indicated, first reading. Moving on to the ninth order of business under motions and resolution, we'll take the three authors' motions as one motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The Senator Limmer's motion on the bottom of page 3 has been stricken. And on page 4, there are several resolutions that will be referred to rules. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Then, Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I would designate the following bill may be made a special order for immediate consideration. House File 1.
House File 1 has been designated a special order. The Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President and members. House File Number 1, Senate File Number 42 is what we're going to be bringing forth here today. And I think it's a pretty straightforward one. I think everybody knows what kind of what's going on here. It's been certainly a work in progress. And where it precipitated, I think, was during the election process that we all went through last fall and all last summer. We talked to our constituents out there, and with the situation that Minnesota's in financially, we're all concerned about business and being a little more business friendly here in Minnesota. And I know that discussion went on as well in the governor's election, with regards to we need to be a little more in tune with business, actually. And so that's what precipitated this particular file, and this is regards to the permitting process for business and economic development in the state. Come again from frustrations and concerns about the time and cost to obtain permits and how it was hurting job creation. We traveled with our committee. I say we, Senator Michelle and myself, traveled to Hibbing, where we actually took input from the public there. And, of course, in attendance was Senator Bach as well as Senator Tomasoni, who just came right out of the, I think right out of the surgery for that meeting. I'm not sure Tomasoni was, but he looked a little more pale than he does today. But we certainly appreciate the fact that he showed up and supported our efforts and what we were doing and what the governor was doing with this. And it was great to see him. And it was a tremendous amount of input that we got up there from the folks. It was a great experience for me. I've never been up there before, never toured one of the mines before, and we did that as well, and it was a great experience and a wonderful resource that we have in Minnesota to be able to see what actually is going on up there and what jobs are created up there and been going on for years. It was really interesting when we talked about, and I don't know, there had to be at least 3 or 4 people that testified that not only my father, but my grandfather actually was a miner, and I'm a miner as well, so it's certainly part of the heritage and the history up there. Folks, again, getting back to the issue here, we decided that we would move forward with some action. The governor's office met with myself and our counterparts in the House. We had a good meeting, and what came from that meeting was ultimately the executive order signed by the governor, which dealt with what we feel exactly 4 different pieces of this legislation, 4 of the 6 or 7 pieces of this legislation. We thank the governor's office for the cooperation and working with us, but we also told him that we were going to be putting this in legislation, and that's exactly what Senate File 1 and 42 are attempting to do here. So Senate File 42 is something that is pretty, again, like I said, straightforward. And folks, you got to be mindful that when we move forward with these permitting bills in the legislature, I think everybody on the floor, all 67 of us will agree that we have to be very mindful of the environment, protecting public health and our natural resources. And that's always been on the forefront when we've been moving this through. House File 42 before us today contains 6 provisions, 4 of which are contained in the governor's executive order that I explained before. I'll quickly just highlight those, and then we'll go through the bill here. The first one is 150 goal for PCA and DNR. That's in the executive order. That's dealt in the bill. The next one is permits in 30 days after the EIS. That's kind of a highlight, but that's an executive order. That's reflected in Section 6, allowing construction but not discharge of water from facilities. In other words, with our in Minnesota, as you well know, we have a certain window period where we're able to do construction in Minnesota, and this allows the folks to go ahead and start building before they get a permit. However, they are not able to discharge until that permit is in their hand. That's a pretty straightforward, part of the bill. Comparisons and reasons why the state is tougher on federal regs. It's covered in Section 4. And the proposer prepares an EIS. That's a new part of this bill where the proposer can actually go out and find an approved company that will actually perform the EIS. However, keeping in mind as we go through this process, and there will be some discussion on these things, I'm sure, that the local units of government as well as the DNR and Minnesota PCA also still has to review those and sign off on those permits. So you're going to hear probably later that obviously that whoever you contract with out there as a proposer, they're going to give you the permit because you're paying for it. That's not the case at all. They still have to go through the process and it has to be approved. So moving into the Senate file, if you will, and then there's going to be a couple amendments that I'm going to offer, and I think there might be one or two other amendments from the floor. Section 1 establishes a 150-day goal for the DNR and PCA to issue environmental and natural resource permits. This also requires two progress reports and for permits not meeting the goals and the reasons why. It also requires the DNR and the MPCA within 30 days of a submitted application to notify the project proposer in writing if the project is not completed or not. Resubmittals begin a new 30-day clock if they're not done properly, so that's covered. It also, that particular thing helps acquire data to identify delays in the process and to fix them. Section 2 of the bill allows a water permit application to begin construction of a new or expanded project, but again, not to be able to discharge until they have that permit in their hand. Again, getting back to the seasonal thing where we in Minnesota can only build certain times of the year. That saves time, especially during the short construction season. Section 4 requires that when the PCA adopts the standards tougher than federal rules, that they justify them and perform a state-by-state comparison of surrounding states and why they are tougher and also a comparison. And I think that's important to understand that Minnesota is tougher. We're one of the tougher regions, I understand, in the country when it comes to permitting for obvious reasons. We have a lot of water resources that could potentially become damaged, and that's why this is going to be in there, and we're still, again, moving forward mindful of that. Section 5 allows a project proposer to prepare a preliminary draft environmental impact statement. This does not change any public comment periods, and the responsible government unit, RGUs, will still retains all authority to review. That's very important, members. The agency will still have to review that permit and that review before the permit is issued. Saves time and cost at the front end. Section 6 requires that final decision on permits be made within 30 days rather than 90 days. Folks, here we're getting into that area now where we're going to be mindful of business, getting these permits out in a quicker fashion. Now, I don't have to repeat to you the horror stories that we've heard about jobs and potential job creators that have even went out state and went different places or a year or two or even 5 years and millions of dollars that have been going on. This is going to certainly help that. Environmental review and permitting run parallel. Information contained in this review documents are also in the permitting documents. Final decisions should be made sooner than 90 days. Madam President and members, Section 7, the environmental review process going to the Court of Appeals, bypassing the district court. This would allow the environmental review appeals to follow the same process of environmental permitting, which when appealed to go to the Court of Appeals, it will also go to the Court of Appeals. There's no change at all in bond requirements. This saves time and money in the process and allows consistency in the process. Now, I know this is going to be somewhat of a contentious area, but folks, almost every permit does end up going to the Court of Appeals, so we're just saying, let's just go right there directly. Again, we're going to show a savings of dollars, not only in the state budget when it comes to court, but the same process and the same amount of folks are going to be heard in this process, and it's just going to be eliminating one step. Section 9 and 10 just clarify that the PCA and RGUs have the authority to charge the project proposer for the cost of reviewing the preliminary draft of the EIS. Section 10 allows state agencies to adopt and conform to the bill normal boilerplate language. And with that, Madam Chair, if I could offer a couple amendments here. The first amendment that I would like to offer is the A3 amendment.
Secretary will report the A3 amendment.
Engelbretson moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011 as follows. Page 1, line 22, delete. This is the A3 amendment.
Senator Engelbretson to the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a technical amendment, again, working with the PCA with their agreement that clarifies the August 1st date on the reports of the 150-day goal and adds 30 business days to the completed application section. Additionally, it precludes any wastewater treatment application permits from the completed application section at the request of the PCA. Again, this is what we refer to a work in progress. This is concerns from the PCA. This satisfies their language. I'd stand for any questions.
Discussion on the A3 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My second amendment is the A6 amendment.
Secretary will report the A6 amendment.
Senator Engelbretson moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011 as follows. Page 7, delete lines. This is the A6 amendment.
Senator Engelbretson to the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This amendment relates to Section 7 of the bill, which was also contained in the Governor's Executive Order. There were some concerns on the language in the bill in regards to the language in the executive order, and this amendment will clarify the intent of that provision. We have worked with the PCA and the administration on this language, and this was agreed upon by both the administration as well as PCA.
Discussion to the A6 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't have any further discussion with regards to this. I have to I truly want to thank both sides here. It's certainly been a bipartisan effort working with the Governor's office as well as other members from the other side of the aisle on this, and I think we all come to an agreement this year that we have to start being, and I think I can quote this from our own commissioner here. We have to be busy, I guess, commerce ready, commerce speed. We have to move with commerce speed if we can. And again, being mindful of the environment and at all times. So again, I thank the folks that have dealt with this, and I stand for any other discussion.
Discussion on House File 1. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the A50.
Senator Saxog moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011 as follows. Page 7 after line 15, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Saxog to the A50 amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment exempts the Iron Range Resources from the Environment Policy Act for purposes of grants and loans. Polymet Corporation came to the Iron Range Resources and asked for a loan to buy property for a land exchange with the federal government. State statute allows Iron Range Resources to buy property. The Iron Range Resource approved the project. There is a provision in that that if Polymet does not get permitted, the Iron Range Resources will get that land. This is not going to have anything to do with any permitting process. It will merely allow the land exchange to move forward, and again, if the project never happens, Iron Range Resources will get the land. The loan in this case was never finalized because Governor Pawlenty did not sign it before he left office. That is required before any funding is approved by Iron Range Resources. Again, the land is being purchased is not going to be permitted for mining and will be exchanged with the federal government. I appreciate support and will stand for any questions.
Discussion to the A50 amendment. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Saksok, for bringing this forward. Again, this has been a lot of discussion that's been going on here, talking with the administration and the folks involved up there. This is certainly going to help out that area, the state, and I accept this as a friendly amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. If Senator Saksog will yield, I have a question.
Senator Saksog will yield. Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Senator Saksog, my question is, you said in your comments that this is an exemption only for the purposes of giving out a loan. So the implication I heard you say is that there would still be some requirements for environmental review by the IRRRB. I'm trying to find the language that says those things that you said. It just removes the IRRRB from the definition of governmental units that are covered by this law. That's what it looks like to me. So maybe you can explain how that relates to the language of your amendment.
Senator Saksok.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Anderson. I think the key things to remember here are that the Iron Range Resource is not a permitting agency, does not have any authority over decisions within environmental review or the permitting process on this project or really on any other project. Again, the loan is going to be used to purchase a piece of land which will have nothing to do with mining, will never be mined. It is just going to be purchased so that it can be exchanged. If that exchange never happens, it will revert to the Iron Range Resources.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Saksog, I understand what you're saying about that loan and the land exchange, and that's something we've talked about before. I guess what I'm wondering, though, if this amendment is a lot broader than that, and if this amendment simply says there will not be any environmental review by the IRRRB in the future, whereas maybe there has been review by them in the past of other projects.
Senator Saksog.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Anderson, I've been on the Iron Range Resources now. I'm going into my ninth year. And I've never been aware of in any way how the Iron Range Resources has been involved in permitting. I think that you may be correct on this particular amendment. I'm sure the charter is where that's probably dealt with, and I'd certainly refer to Senator Tomassoni if he has any idea on that particular or any more information on that particular subject.
Senator Tomassoni.
Madam President, I think the answer to your question, Senator Anderson, is that the Iron Range Resources doesn't get involved in environmental impact statements or permitting processes. All we do is give loans for environment or economic development projects. And so by the time that a project gets to the board level for our approval for funding, it has gone through several different reviews, and we do not ever do any kind of permitting or any kind of environmental impact. The possibility is that we fund a project and the Polymet project is an example. Another example might be SR Steel. Another example might be Mesaba Nugget. But the fact of the matter is that our money goes in for purposes of moving the project forward so that we can get jobs and that we can get a project to the point where we will actually be operating. But regardless of whether or not we put money into the project, has nothing to do with the permitting process or the environmental impact statement. That still is conducted by the other agencies that are responsible for those particular things.
Senator Saxlog.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Thomasonian. And Senator Anderson, I think Senator Thomasoni brings up a really good point here, and that's that we have loaned money to Esser Steel, to Mesaba Nugget. We've supported U.S. Steel in some of their projects, and many of them aren't even permitted yet. So believe me, if Iron Range Resources wanted to get involved in permitting, we'd have it done. But all we've done is loan or grant money, and it's one of the reasons why we think this is a very important bill, is that we're having a lot of problems getting just iron and steel projects off the ground. Thank you.
Further discussion on House File 1, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the good discussion here. I should just let the body know here that this amendment was added to House File Number 1 on a vote of 100-29 in affirmative. So it was vetted quite well in the House, and the vote was 100-29.
Further discussion? Seeing none, on the A50 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does prevail. Further discussion on House File 1. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President and members, the bill has come a long way, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in the time that you've been working on it, and I thank you for the changes that you have made. Some of the most problematic pieces have been replaced or removed totally, and I thank you for that. All the work that we do in committees makes bills better, and I think that's why so many times we have such tough discussions in the committees. But I still have a problem with Section 5, which is the section that allows the proposer of an environmental impact statement to actually, or proposal of a project, to prepare the environmental impact statement. Excuse me. I think that this piece in this bill just totally violates the intent of the environmental impact statement, which is to require that a government agency, or many government agencies, depending on the scope of the project, take a hard look at the environmental consequences of the action that's being considered. Doing what the bill would say, having the proposer do the environmental impact statement, creates an unavoidable conflict of interest by leaving it to the project sponsor to evaluate and publicly disclose any negative environmental impacts of the proposal. And that leads to a situation that may be called the foxes in charge of the chicken coop. If you find through your work that the project would have very negative environmental impacts, the pressure on you as a company to not include those in your impact statement would be very great. It also is just a way to put the proposer in just an untenable situation. You know that this project might be harmful to the lakes, the air, you know, the parts of Minnesota that we all know and love. But what do? You're all invested in this project. Do you come clean and say, yeah, it has negative effects? or you hide them someplace. It's a tough, tough thing that we would put the proposer in the situation to do, and I think it's unnecessary that we would do that. I've heard statements from proponents of this provision saying that the applicant would hire a contractor and then put pressure on the contractor to work 24/7 to get this EIS done as fast as you can. But I think it's naive to think that the applicant would not also pressure the consultant to create an EIS that leans in the favor of the project, regardless of what the facts might say. It also may leave the public out of the initial discussions and the decisions on what should be included in the EIS. And the public members, the men, women, and children of Minnesota, are who we do the EIS for their protections and for the protections of the environment that I believe we all hold dear. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to move to remove Section 5 from the bill. It starts on page 7, line 16. And I'd like a roll call vote.
Senator Higgins, are you offering the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair, I'm just moving to delete that section. It's not, the A2 has more than that in it.
Thank you, Senator Higgins. Could you repeat the section?
Section 5, starting on line 7.16, or at least of the bill that was up there, which is Senate File 42, not House File 1. But maybe it's the same. I don't know the page and lines.
It is the same language. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011 as follows. Page 7, delete Section 5.
Discussion to that amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I rise against this amendment, and here are the reasons why. There was a lot of work that's gone on with this, and I know this is certainly one of the, I don't think it's a contentious area, but it was certainly one of the areas of concern. Strictly what's going on here, it's only a preliminary draft of the EIS. There's no change to the public comment periods. The responsible government unit, the RGUs, and we all know that term, still retains all authority to review, modify, and determine completeness of the application. The oversight and ultimate final decision still resides with the RGU. There is no fear of the fox in the hen house, folks. It still has to be reviewed, and stringent review, I might add, by the locals and units of government. And again, I ask members to vote against this amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, there seems to be a discrepancy between House File 1 and Senate File 42 and what section this really is. And I'm befuddled at this point. And possibly somebody at the desk
Senate language
can help us. Working on the Senate language, then why do the amendments all amend House File 1?
Because it's pursuant to, hang on, just give us 1 minute to get a clear answer. We are using the Senate language, and it was amended under Rule 45. So we are using the Senate language. Senator, are you able to find it? Or maybe we could send someone over to help you find exactly. Senator Higgins.
Well, then, Madam President, I think it's still Section 5. It's Section 5 of the document that was on the bench in front. But
which would have been, and just to confirm, you're looking at across the top, it says Senate file number 42, and then authors and companion to House file 1. Is that what you've, the language you've got on the top of yours?
Companion to House file 1, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So, Madam Chair, that's right. And, Madam Chair, in response to Senator Ingebretson?
Senator Higgins.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Ingebretson, I appreciate your feelings on this. I just feel that we are putting the proposer, the applicant, in a situation it should not have to be in. It also then, I believe, has the potential to really... all the words I'm thinking about are so not senatorial. It puts you in a position of making decisions that fundamentally affect your business and giving you the opportunity to not be square with the regulatory agency. Okay, I think I said that in a way that might make sense. Okay, so anyway, I just fundamentally disagree, and I believe that the bill would be much stronger if we did not have this position in it, and I would like your support. Thank you.
Just before that, Senator Bach, we do have the amendment, the A57 amendment, that we believe it is page 7, delete section 5. So if that would be okay with you, Senator Higgins, we'll report that amendment and have you offer the A57. Does that work?
It's in writing. Same.
It is the same thing as opposed to having an oral amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 and adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011, as follows. Page 7, delete Section 5. This is the A57 amendment.
Discussion to that amendment, Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, maybe the desk can help us, but in looking on my computer at House File 1, as amended by the Senate language under Rule 45, it looks to me like Senator Higgins' intent is to delete Section 9, not Section 5, but maybe the desk could help us.
Senator Bach, just a moment, and we'll see if we can confirm that. Senator Bach, I believe we're making sure we are working off the same document so that you're pulling up the right. But my understanding is what you want to take out, Senator Higgins, is the EIS. And on the document that we are working from, it is Section 5, and that A57 amendment is correct. And I think that they will probably is what you want to do. Is removed under this, the bill that we're working under, it's Section 5. And maybe.
Madam President.
Senator Koch.
Just as to be helpful, maybe I think there's other amendments at the desk. Perhaps we could take up some amendments, and then that would allow Senator Higgins to make certain. I want to make sure that she's gotten comfortable with the language. So.
Senator Higgins, is that something you'd be interested in doing? Are we certain which one? My understanding is you want Section 5, but your preference.
Madam Chair, Council has told me that it is Section 5 that I want, and then Sections 8 and 9, which Senator Bach was just talking about, are a way that the responsible government unit assesses the cost of doing that back. So I think it's Section 5, like I originally said. Thank you.
So further discussion on the A57 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose this amendment. I appreciate what Senator Ingebretson talked about, but you know, a couple things about this overall bill. We want certainty and predictability for the business owner trying to expand, trying to grow in Minnesota. But one of the other factors we want is the opportunity for them to save some time. We know the stories of 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and so they're trying to speed up the process. And again, this does not take away from the responsible government unit the ability to vet that EIS and make sure that it's appropriate. But the way it works right now is when they require an EIS, they go out and contract that anyway. And so allowing them to do it and then still letting the RGU come back and look at that gives the opportunity for that business person to speed up the process. And so in addition to certainty and predictability, we want to save some time for these business owners. So I rise to oppose this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Kelash.
Madam Chair, will Senator Ingebretson yield for a question?
Senator Ingebretson will yield.
Senator Ingebretson, one of the things that I'm concerned about is in order to make sure that the private EIS is done to the standards necessary for the review of the agencies, don't the agencies have to review all of it and make sure that the accuracy of those numbers are correct and that all factors were considered at the same time, so they have to do the work anyway?
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question. Yes, but the majority of the work would be done by a very professional engineering consulting firm, and all that work would be done. That'd just simply be a review that would be done. And again, the review has to be done, has to be approved by the same agencies that have had to do it in the past.
Further discussion? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. If Senator Ingebretson would yield.
Senator Ingebretson will yield.
Senator Ingebretson, I still haven't heard quite clearly how we know that if the entity, the business entity responsible for the project is in charge of the environmental impact statement, overseeing it, funding the studies, et cetera, and as we know, the environmental analysis, whether it's an EAW or an EIS, it's a public process, fully available to the public for review and scrutiny. It's about a decision that's going to be made about, you know, something that's in the public realm, a public permit that's impacting the environment, which of course we all share and rely on for many reasons. How do we know that that's going to be a completely transparent process and that's not going to be generating privately held information that's guarded and kept out of view and scrutiny of the public under the guise of proprietary information, privately paid for information, et cetera? That's my deep concern. We have the fox guarding the hen house. That's a valid concern that Senator Higgins has raised. But what about the transparency and the availability of all the data and analysis that goes into generating these studies?
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you for that. Once again, Fox regarding the hen house analogy here. And you know, we put the trust in the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Department for years, And they're still going to give them the same amount of transparency as you talk about. In fact, on 10.3, if it's not permissible in this bill, it can be sent back. So again, folks, we're talking about a business or a firm being hired by a professional engineering consulting firms, and we have those in Minnesota. They're accepted. Their practices are accepted by the state of Minnesota, have in the past, the way I understand it. And it's just, again, keeping and being very mindful of our environment as we're moving through this. I think that addresses this.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eliminating district court jurisdiction or changing it does not limit citizen participation. Citizen participation in environmental review, they will review that just as they do in agency decisions to issue an environmental permit. By submitting comments and testifying at public hearings at environmental review processes. There is no citizen participation in any challenge to an inadequacy of an environmental review, whether in district court or in court of appeals. The courts review the administrative record. They do not allow discovery, and they do not take testimony from witnesses. So citizens have a right to participate, whether it's in the district court or whether it's in the appellate court, but prior to the court business. So this idea that somehow citizens are not included in this is simply inaccurate.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, I'd like to ask for a roll call, but also want to say that I think it truly is, as Senator Higgins said, fox guarding the chicken coop. I mean, it is a question, who is preparing it, who's doing the work on it? If the agency is taking too long, if they don't have enough staff, provide the staff for them instead of saying we're going to put it outside. When somebody is paying you to do the analysis of their project, you remember who's paying the bills, and frankly, that does have an impact. And I think the only way we're going to make sure all the data is available, I see you've got it there, they're supposed to share all the background information. The only way the agency has of knowing whether all the data is out there is if they do it themselves. I think that's the way we've done it for these years. It's worked well. I understand the concerns about timing. If you want to speed up the process, make sure they have the people necessary to do it.
Further discussion on the A57 amendment. Seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 47 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Ingebrigtsen yield for a question?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, can you tell me, there are some change in the language relating to the requirement for an appeal bond to be posted. Can you tell me if that language is technical in nature, it's not a substantive change, or if it is a substantive change, what the change is and the impact of it?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and we're looking for consistency here, and that's exactly what we contend to do here. Currently, the appeals environmental permits go directly to Court of Appeals, just looking to have environmental review decisions follow the same path. So it's just a duplicative services. I hope that answers your question.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I thought it did until you referred to duplicative services, and I'm not sure what you meant by that. There's language in the bill that deals with the standard for the requiring an appellate bond for whichever party appeals to the Court of Appeals. And the question is whether or not the language change is merely a technical clarification of that standard or whether it's intended to change the substantive standard for requiring that appellate bond.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. I'm sorry about that, Senator Latz. You're correct. The question that you're asking was worked out between the administration and the PCA, and that was some technical language. And it allows, I believe, the state agencies to adopt rules conforming to boilerplate. Is that what you're talking about? That was talked about with regards to Section 7, I believe it is. There's no change at all to the bond requirements. Is that what you're talking about?
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, it is in Section 7, I believe lines 11.7 and 11.8. And then some deletions on the following lines. So it sounds like, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's not intended to make a substantive change to the standard for requiring an appeal bond. Let the record reflect Senator Ingebrigtsen is nodding his head yes. Is that?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
I also had a question. Maybe Senator Ingebrigtsen can clarify for me. It looks to me like the existing bill would completely remove from the district court, and this is again in Section 7, would completely remove from the district court review of the EIS when there's an appeal or a judicial review sought after the responsible governmental unit has made its decision. I wonder if Senator Ingebrigtsen could verify for me that that is the effect of the bill in its current language.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz, as I stated before, this would allow the environmental review appeals to follow the same process of the environmental permitting. I think that's what you're talking about.
So,
Senator
Madam
Latz.
President, I'll take that as a confirmation that the bill makes a pretty dramatic change then in the current process for judicial review of environmental impact statements. And the current process is that an appeal would first go to the district court, which would be venued in the county or where the project is proposed in the local governmental unit. The responsible governmental unit, the RGU, has made its decision. That judicial review, while not a separate evidentiary or evidence-gathering proceeding, is easily accessible to the local population that wishes to closely follow the proceedings relating to the permit that has been sought and the project that's being proposed. Where under the current bill, then, that legal proceeding would be moved to St. Paul. So no matter what part of the state you're from, if you wish to personally observe the judicial proceedings, you would have to travel to St. Paul in order to observe that. And as a practical matter for many people in their own communities, that frankly would not be practical. They would not be able to take the time away to make a 3 or 4 or 5 hour drive in order to certainly a lot fewer people would be able to do that than could currently go to the local courthouse to observe the proceedings. The other concern I have with that provision is that when there are local permits that are involved separate from the environmental impact statement, such as building permits or zoning variances or something like that, those would still be venued for judicial review purposes in the local district court. So you would end up having, if there were questions or legal issues relating to those local permits, you would still end up with district court proceedings on the case. And then if there were further challenge, appellate court proceedings after that. So you would not end up saving any additional time from that standpoint. You're still going to end up in district court. So it would just seem to me that it would make more sense if there's going to be any local permitting involved, and the district court is the appropriate venue for that, that as long as the district court is handling matters relating to the case, they could also handle the environmental impact statement judicial review and include that analysis, as is the current law. But then you're really not having that much, if any, duplication, because the district court is already going through an extended legal analysis of the proceedings. And in the event that there were any kind of a frivolous attempt to challenge a local permit just for when there wasn't any merit involved in that, just to try to get it into district court, well, that would be thrown out and the lawyers would be, and the parties would be subject to either Minnesota Statute Section 542 sanctions or Rule 11 sanctions for bringing non-meritorious or frivolous lawsuits. It seems to me that we would end up actually eliminating some duplication anyway if we had the proceedings in local district court for the EIS as well as any local permit reviews that did have a meritorious challenge to be in district court. And for that purpose, Madam President, I'd like to offer the A7 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011 as follows. Page 10, delete Section 7 and insert. This is the A7 amendment.
Discussion to the A7 amendment. Senator Latz.
Well, Madam President, I guess I've just explained the intent and purpose of the amendment and ask for the body's support on this.
Discussion to the A7. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, the way I kind of understand it, you know, the Minnesota Court of Appeals was created, I think, a few years ago, 1983. And there's other agencies that involve themselves with pollution and environmental protection that the state has, but they don't go to district courts. They don't have a group of citizens going, and they may be interested in following those cases, but they don't go to the district court. And so what Senator Ingebrigtsen is doing is creating the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act to include moving away from the district court and allowing the appellate court to be the primary jurisdiction court of these issues. But according to the record I have, the Court of Appeals has exclusive jurisdiction over environmental issues, permits especially by the Minnesota PCA, Pollution Control Agency, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and a few other state agencies. So there's already a streamlined jurisdictional process for those agencies already. And somehow, since 1983, when the court was created, this MEPA business didn't get included in it. And so the issue of whether or not there's citizens that want to participate, I would imagine you'd probably say that they have as much difficulty listening to the appellate court in considering issues before it that are the sole jurisdiction of that court as what this may propose. But we do have a model that's been in existence for a number of agencies, especially involving environmental issues like this, And that has been the Court of Appeals as the primary jurisdiction court.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, the appellate courts have been reviewing the environmental impact statements that are issued by state agencies where the projects are so large and significant and cover some such substantial territory that it's the statewide agencies themselves that are reviewing and issuing the permits. And that is consistent with a variety of other areas of the law in which state agency decisions are reviewed directly by the Court of Appeals because they have an immediate or a broader statewide impact. But in the cases that are being dealt with in Section 7 of the bill before us, these are decisions that have been historically made at the local level. It's a local governmental unit, typically smaller projects that the local public is more directly involved in at the level of their county government or their city government, and are accustomed to the local district courts reviewing these as well. And it's entirely appropriate, and I think there are a lot of other cases in which local governmental unit decisions don't go directly to the Court of Appeals. They go directly to district court. So the district courts are already accustomed to not only handling the environmental-related cases that come from local governmental units, as they have been now for decades, but other matters that come from local governmental units as well.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition of this amendment, and I do so for the following reasons. First of all, as to the issue of whether this appeal should go to the district court or to the Court of Appeals, I would remind you that under Chapter 14, the Administrative Procedures Act, there are many, many administrative actions that already go to the Court of Appeals on a direct appeal and do not go to the district court. I would also remind you that this appeal that is being proposed that goes directly to the Court of Appeals is an appeal only on the record. There is no testimony that is taken. There is no new evidence that is administered or admitted into evidence. And so really all you have is a review of the administrative actions that were taken during the administrative process. And so to the next point, in reality, if you require this to first go to the district court before it goes to the Court of Appeals, I remind you again that you also still have yet a third level of an appeal, and that would be to the Supreme Court. So in reality, by requiring this go to the district court, you're simply inserting another level of appellate review. And it will, in fact, slow down the process, which is exactly what we are trying to not have happen. And you are not going to accomplish anything in the way of improving the system. So, you know, as to the necessity of going to the district court, it already happens in terms of Court of Appeals going directly to the Court of Appeals. And I see no reason why we cannot continue that practice by eliminating the necessity to go to the district court. Just go straight to the Court of Appeals and let them decide the issue on the merits. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, to those points, Senator Newman, yes, it will go to the under the current bill and even under my proposed amendment, appeals that don't involve local permits of other sorts will still go directly to the Court of Appeals. My amendment does not propose to change that. But if there is another challenge relating to other permits relating to the project, which will be heard in district court anyway, I propose to allow the local district court that's already going to have to dig into this record and the project and understand everything that's going on and use up judicial resources to absorb all of that, to also consider the EIS while it's before that court for those other purposes. If the only purpose were to increase the processing speed, here I would submit that we can hearken back a little bit to to the earlier discussion relating to the proposer arranging for their own draft of the EIS, because the local governmental unit, no matter how you cut it, unless they have the expertise in-house, which is usually not the case, will still have to go through an RFP process and hire a consultant to take their own independent look at the process and the EIS, which is going to take up more time. So you've actually added a second step in the EIS draft process already. So I would suggest speed here is not the primary purpose of the amendment or of the underlying bill, although it's certainly an important component of some other aspects of the bill.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, Senator Latz, it seems to me there would only be two reasons to require these appeals to go through the district court. One would be if the district court is going to do something different or look at the record differently or take testimony that wouldn't be accomplished in the Court of Appeals, which is not the case. In this instance, and I hate to have to get into lawyer speak because that may make the gallery want to use some words that Senator Higgins resisted, but this is not what's called an evidentiary or de novo hearing. What would happen at the district court is they would look at the record from the administrative body and review it, just like at the Court of Appeals. It's simply adding another layer. The only other thing I can think of that would justify Senator Latz's amendment is if we are concerned that there may be some hearings that need to take place in front of a court that should take place locally because there are some specific issues that you really need to have some local insight. Well, the fact is that the Court of Appeals rules specifically provide the opportunity for parties to petition the court to have the hearing moved out of the metro area, out of St. Paul, and to wherever it should take place in order for those issues to be heard. So the fact is, Senator Latz's amendment will accomplish one thing and one thing only, and that is duplication and extending of the process. And the idea that it's not going to apply unless there's a local permit that's required. Any project of significance is going to require at least a conditional use permit or some other small local permit. So Senator Latz, with this amendment, is basically hooking in all projects to another layer of judicial review, which is great for lawyers and not good for Minnesotans. And therefore, I would request members to vote against this amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the A7 amendment? Senator Latz.
Madam President, I'm not going to respond any further on the substance, just ask for a roll call.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. Roll call is granted. And Senator Latz renews his motion to amend House File 1 with the A7 amendment. The Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll, there being 17 ayes and 48 nays, the motion does not prevail. Is there any further discussion on House File 1?
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
In light of that decision by the body, I would like to offer the A56 amendment. Members, this amendment deals
Senator Latz, the Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Latz moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011, as follows. Page 10, delete Section 7 and insert. This is the A56 amendment.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, this amendment addresses only the question of encouraging the Court of Appeals to go have their hearings in the local communities that are so interested in the results of the permitting process. It does not deal at all with the jurisdiction of District Court versus Court of Appeals. The language is crafted so as to not make any requirements upon the judicial branch, but rather to encourage them that the Court of Appeals shall, whenever possible, conduct its proceedings near where the project has been proposed. For all of you who represent parts of Minnesota that are further away from St. Paul than, say, Minneapolis, that you may wish to support this amendment to facilitate access to the judicial proceedings for your constituents. I encourage your support, and I ask for a roll call.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, in listening to your amendment, is this a new responsibility you're giving the appellate court? To go to a site-specific, is there a fiscal note that might accompany your amendment?
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, the language is that, quote, the Court of Appeals shall, whenever possible, conduct its proceedings near where the project has been proposed, close quote. So I would suggest that we're not imposing any requirement upon the Court of Appeals. They will use their own discretion to determine when it is possible and when it is not. I would assume within that discretion it will include a consideration of whether they have the financial resources within the budget to be able to accommodate that request of the legislature.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam President.
Senator Latz, perhaps you can help me. We have a tradition in Minnesota, at least with our judiciary, to give the courts a wide latitude in using their own discretion. Does that same discretion currently reside in the appellate court? Do we have to tell them that they have discretionary powers in this discussion? Don't they have that discretionary power as it is?
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer, as I understand, yes, they do, and it typically is exercised when one or both of the parties makes a specific request. What this amendment would do would put this legislative body on record as encouraging the Court of Appeals to ab initio, if you will, on its own initiative, exercise that discretion to hold local hearing on the matter.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Again, I stand in opposition of this particular amendment. First, I want to address the issue of the Court of Appeals moving. I really don't believe that we have to place in statute a requirement that the Court of Appeals move around the state of Minnesota to hear cases. They already do that. They do it on a regular basis. And as articulated by Senator Thompson, they do it, when they think it is appropriate and in accordance with their rules. So there really isn't any need to place that requirement in statute. The other thing I wanted to bring up is in looking at the amendment, I'm looking at the A56 amendment. I believe that's the one that we're dealing with.
Yes, it is, Senator.
And that still has the language in it concerning the district court of the county where the proposed action or any part thereof would be undertaken, and appears to me to be significantly changing the language in Section 7 of the proposed bill. So I'm a little confused as to, the amendment itself. Doesn't contain the underlined information regarding, the district court only is addressing the Court of Appeals.
Senator Letts.
Madam President, I have just been informed by Senate counsel that the language in the amendment A56 does something a little bit different than was my intent. I'd ask if we can perhaps lay it on the table or withdraw the amendment for a moment or two while Council is redrafting it, simply to insert the language that I sought into Section 7.
Senator Latz withdraws the A56 amendment. Is there any further discussion on House File 1?
Well, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
I suppose I can sit here and discuss for a few minutes while Senate Council is redrafting the amendment. I know sometimes in the past, Council's informed me it would be just a few moments. If we could do something else that would stall the proceedings long enough for Senate Council to accommodate that language request. Unless anyone else wants to discuss it before we move on in the agenda.
Senator Bach.
Well, if we're on the bill, Madam President and members, and I'm going to vote for the bill, Senator Ingebrigtsen. I appreciate all your work on it, and I hope it's been worked out so that the governor actually signs it. It's my hope. But I just want to raise a little bit of caution after this passes that we be careful with some of the rhetoric, because I expect some people are going to characterize this as a jobs bill, and now we're going to put Minnesotans back to work because we've passed this legislation. And just a little personal story to explain to you how difficult environmental permitting is in the north. And oftentimes when we talk about environmental permitting, people look north because that's where Minnesota's heavy industry is, the mining and the wood products industries. In 2001, LTB Mining Company from Cleveland went bankrupt. And they owned a mine in northern Minnesota in Hoyt Lakes. And 1,400 people lost their job that worked for the mine. At the IRRRB, we hired a consultant to go look for some kind of a facility that we could put there to replace LTV steel. And we came across some value-added steel technology that was being done really just on a demonstration basis in a lab. And it was a company in Japan, and their name was Colby Steel. And they had the idea of building a rotary hearth furnace and putting iron ore and coal on the hearth and making a value-added iron product with a higher concentration of iron than the taconite pellets we were currently making. Taconite pellets are about 65% iron units. These nuggets, as Colby Steel had called them, were about 97, 98% iron. So they'd be able to be used as a sweetener in blast furnaces or in electric arc furnaces in this country, or be able to use as a feedstock to go directly into foundries. Something that we didn't make in Minnesota, a new value-added product. So we were pretty excited about that. Deed was pretty excited about that. We started working with Colby Steel to bring them to Minnesota. The state of Minnesota invested a lot of money in this at the bench level to try bring it along. And eventually the project was bought by a company from Indiana by the name of Steel Dynamics. And when they started to enter the environmental review process, the CEO of Steel Dynamics announced that the environmental review process in Minnesota is going to take too long. And we're going to take this new technology that Minnesota, between the IRRRB and Deed, had invested over $40 million in, taking it from the bench to a demonstration plant that we built in Silver Bay, and now we were going to build the full-scale commercial plant in Hoyt Lakes. And there was a headline story that the plant might go to Indiana. And the legislature responded. And I was the author of the bill in the Senate. Representative Dill was the author of the bill in the House, and I believe the bill here in the Senate passed, I believe it was a unanimous vote, to exempt Steel Dynamics from the environmental review process completely. The very first time that we had a project like that that had no requirement for an EIS at all. None. Now here we're talking about streamlining that process to make things happen a little faster. That project, that bill passed, I believe, unanimously. You know, it still took us 18 months to get a permit. 18 months to get a permit, even with no environmental review process at all, being completely exempt from the environmental review. That's how hard environmental permitting is, especially in the north, because we have to deal with all of the federal agencies, the EPA, the Army Corps of Engineers, the federal land managers, all get involved in this environmental review process. And if I certainly am supportive of doing what we can do. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, I want to help you. Thank you again for doing this. What I just would ask that people are careful. There's a number of large projects under the environmental review process right now in the north. Billions of dollars of investment, most of it foreign. But I'm always very careful when I lead people to believe in the newspaper that the jobs are going to come. Because, members, when we do things and we and families sit down at their kitchen table tonight and read what we did, what we have done, if we lead them to believe that the jobs are going to come, families make decisions based on what we say here. So just please, as we go forward, be careful, because families that are looking for employment are watching our actions, and let's be careful not to mislead them that now all of a sudden all these jobs are going to come, because in this environment we all know jobs are in real short supply. So let's just be careful that we don't raise people's expectations too much. I think this is a very good first start, but let's just be careful that we don't characterize it as doing more than what it really can do. But Senator Ingebrigtsen, again, thank you for your work on this.
Senator Letch, your amendment is at the desk.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to offer the A54 amendment, and I request a roll call.
Senator Letch, do you wish to speak to it or just, okay. Is there any discussion on the A54 amendment? Excuse me, the Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Letch moves to amend House File Number 1 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 and adopted by the Senate February 17, 2011, as follows. Page 11, line 4, after the period, insert. This is the A54 amendment.
Is there any discussion on the A54 amendment? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're not finding it coming up here yet. If we could just take a look at it real quickly. Do we have a thank you.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment, again, I rise in opposition and simply says that the Court of Appeals shall, wherever possible, conduct its proceedings near where the project is proposed. Very short, very simple. And I just reiterate the arguments of both Senator Thompson and myself that the Court of Appeals already has the ability to do just that and often do. Note the language says that the Court of Appeals shall. It would appear to be mandatory. And the way the Court of Appeals currently operates is in cases where there is a lot of local input and a lot of local interest, they already go to various locations around the state and hear the arguments. And the final thing that I would again remind you is that what you're going to see at the Court of Appeals is arguments by the lawyers. You're not going to be listening to any kind of testimony or evidence coming in. So it's something that is wholly unnecessary for the purposes of protecting the people in this state, and I would oppose the amendment.
Is there any further discussion on the A54 amendment? Senator Letch.
I will just add briefly, Madam President, that this legislature now has the opportunity to go on the record to encourage our appellate court in these kind of controversial cases that have an intense public interest to go hear those cases in the local communities, or if this legislature wishes, to not encourage the Court of Appeals to hear these kind of controversial cases in their local communities. I'd ask you to consider what position your constituents would want you to take on that. Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I rise in opposition to this amendment. Folks, it's very simply here. We're requiring the Court of Appeals to do this. They now have the option to do that. I think we should leave that up to the Court of Appeals.
If there's no further discussion, Senator Latz renews his motion to amend House File 1 with the A54 amendment, and he has requested a roll call vote. The Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 21 ayes and 45 nays, the motion does not prevail. Is there any further discussion on House File 1? Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Ingebretson yield for a question?
Senator Ingebretson appears to be willing to yield.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Ingebretson.
It is
President,
Madam President.
I'm sorry. Madam President, Senator Ingebretson, I noticed you haven't talked anything today about how much the bill costs. Could you tell us how much it costs? And how you're paying for it, please.
Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Lead Higgins on that question. She's been keeping my feet to the fire, folks, on these financial bills. As you know, we're both doing both finance as well as policy, so I appreciate that. Yes, in fact, I think Senator Limmer's bill will actually reflect a decrease with the court system. There's some few odd, I believe it was $37,000, and the rest of the dollars now, and I believe that was a fairly significant amount, 800, and if I could say 850, some 850,000, 9.5 employees, will be worked out through my budget, and that'll be coming from the environmental fund, and again, knowing how important this is to the administration and working with them as well as, you know, obviously the commissioner, and knowing how important this is to the governor's office, obviously we're going to be certainly looking at that in my budgeting process, and we'll find the money by juggling it someplace else. So it's been talked about.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Ingebretson. So the bill costs about $1.8 million for the biennium and about $1.7 million for the next biennium, if I'm looking at the right fiscal note?
That's correct, but we're not talking about general fund money.
So then, Madam President and Senator Ingebretson, I also see that this is going to add some full-time equivalent. So you're hiring public employees, adding to the public employee roster in this bill?
Senator Ingebretson.
Madam Chair, and yes, thank you for that. And members, yes, we are actually. And I certainly have some issues with the amount of people that are being hired here, actually, by cutting the process. That was discussed in the committee, as you very well remember. And I think those figures yet are to be totally determined, but this would be worst-case scenario. I think, actually, they can do a little better than that, and we're going to work with, again, the administration to get that down.
So, Madam President,
Senator Higgins.
We have a bill before us that isn't paid for, will be paid for sometime in the future. We are hiring 19 people in this biennium, 18 people in the next biennium. Costs $1.8 million this biennium, $1.7 million the next biennium. And isn't coming through the regular channels. It's not coming as part of the omnibus environment bill. It's kind of floating out there on its own, and so this is not a terribly regular thing to do, and I'm very concerned that for all of our talk about making smaller government and cutting costs, here we are with yet another bill that costs money.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Higgins, you can rest assured that we will be looking at cutting here and there to make this happen. This is a priority from the administration and a bipartisan bill, and it is going to be my intentions to juggle people around and juggle functions around to make sure that this does happen. Some other areas are going to be cut. There's no question about that, but that's yet to be determined in my budget committee.
Is there any further discussion on House File 1? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. Correct? President. Still? I just want to speak briefly on the bill because I'm going to vote against it, and I just wanted to be clear about why. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think you've come a long ways on this bill, and it has some good things in it. But it's not quite all the way there yet. And personally, I don't have a problem with adding some staff and spending some money on environmental protection. I think that that's a good thing, although I'm not sure that all of you would agree with that. But I think it's a good idea to streamline environmental permitting, make it faster, make it more efficient, make it more user-friendly. But we need to be very, very careful that we're not doing this to reduce environmental protection. And I've been very interested to be watching the polls and the surveys and the stories in the national media about what's going on with the National Environmental Protection Agency and Congress, because there's been a very strong effort to undermine the EPA, to abolish the EPA, to take away its funding, to take away its authority. And there's been a number of national polls that have been done just in the last few weeks that have shown that strong majorities of Americans support EPA authority to regulate clean air, to regulate clean water, to maintain environmental protections. In fact, I just saw an interesting poll yesterday that said that Americans trust the EPA more than they trust Congress. And I just want to be clear that I think you could argue that there was a mandate from the voters to be more efficient in our environmental permitting and to do it in the name of creating jobs. But there was certainly not a voter mandate to diminish our protection by good, aggressive laws that protect our clean air and water in Minnesota. And I'm concerned about the provision that allows project proposers to make decisions about information that will be put into their environmental impact statement and to draft those. That's going too far in the wrong direction, and I think that does jeopardize our ability to have strong public input, transparency, and a good, strong process of protecting our air and water. So for that reason, I will be voting no.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Anderson, for those comments. And I want to thank Senator Bach for his comments, who I think couldn't have said it any better. We all struggle for reasons to vote for bills, and we always try and bring the opinions and the feelings of the folks that actually send us here into this body, and he did it very, very well there when it comes to the perception about what's going on in not only Minnesota but the state and the nation when it comes to the environmental review process and permitting process that's been so-called dragging their feet. I guess they've been accused of this and they've been accused of that. And we talked to the MPCA when first putting this bill together and understand that they also have to deal with federal regulations. And we understand that. That's part of the process. We don't have a whole lot of control over that. But nevertheless, when you hear stories like the Senator Bach had talked about businesses leaving our state or not even coming here because they just don't want to bother with it, it's very troublesome to us. That's why you found a bipartisan, group to go ahead with this this process, the governor's office coming out with an executive order. I believe it was his first executive order of business, and so he's very serious about this as well as we are, and I think he's reflecting the opinion of the folks out there that sent him to send him into the governor's office. And And yes, I agree. We got to be careful with the rhetoric of this is going to all of a sudden put a whole bunch of jobs in Minnesota. I'm not into that kind of stuff, frankly. But if it's going to make it easier, if it's going to help the process of bringing some business here into our state, we should certainly be looking at that. And we're looking at that being mindful of the environment. And when our own commissioner says we have to start moving at the speed of commerce, Commissioner Austin's quote, we have to start moving at the speed of commerce. That tells you that this is very important. And thank you for the great discussion. And again, I support this bill, and I hope everybody in this body will.
There's no further discussion. The secretary will give House File 1 a third reading.
House File Number 1, a bill for an act relating to the environment, providing for permitting efficiency, third reading.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, I think Commissioner's comments about moving the regulation to the speed of commerce is appropriate if we're making sure we protect the environment. I think Minnesota's had a proud tradition for 40 years of having good environmental standards, and I'm not sure that we're being more concerned about the speed of it than we are about the regulatory process. And every year, as we cut back a little bit more on the state agencies, and then they have fewer people to do the work, and then it takes them longer, then we say, look, they can't do it on a timely basis. I think that the point is when we cross the line, we say the person seeking the permit can have the environmental review done by their contractor. I just think that's crossed the line. I urge your rejection of the bill.
There's no further discussion. The secretary will take the roll on House File 1. All senators voting who desire to vote. The secretary will close the roll. There being 49 ayes and 16 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Koch.
Madam President, remaining under motions and resolutions, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bill be made a special order for immediate consideration, House File 55.
House File 55 has been designated a special order. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President, members. Senate File 48, House File 55, is the omnibus lands bill from the 2010 legislative session. Last year, near the end of session, this lands bill was combined with the Game and Fish bill. The combined bill then passed in both bodies, but was vetoed due to items contained in the Game and Fish portion of the bill. The section of the bill that's most important for budget reasons is Section 10. That section authorizes the DNR to sell certain acquired lands for less than their appraised value in order to meet the budget balancing requirements of the 2005 law that requires the sale of $6.44 million of state-owned lands by June 30, 2011. State agencies have sold approximately $4.3 million of that state-owned lands, leaving a balance due of about $2.1 million. The lands may not be sold for less than 75% of their appraised value. When passed, the DNR will hold a land sale within 60 days. The bill also addresses land sales of specific parcels of land for which legislative approval is required. This includes land sales by the counties as well as by the DNR. The bill also addresses additions and deletions from the state parks and state forest boundaries. The goal is to pass this bill as soon as possible. Members, there may possibly be another lands bill that might come up this year and be included in an omnibus bill. This particular bill, we're seeing it as very important to get it up for sale as soon as possible because of the 60-day notice requirement and getting those lands up for sale and get them sold by June 30th. So with that, Madam President, I would stand for questions.
Discussion on House File 55. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Carlson, thank you for carrying this bill and for your explanation of the accommodation made to DNR in order to be able to meet the obligation that a long ago, legislature put on them to solve the budget by requiring land sales. And it came to a point they've made yeoman's effort. It wasn't just DNR, other agencies, but DNR controls most of the state-owned lands. A lot of them cannot be sold to be put into the general fund. So there is no recreational lands and lands acquired by other purposes that can be put up for sale. But this has been a barrier, and it has affected our fiscal, forecast year in and year out, because it's presented as revenue. And when it doesn't come, it's a part of the shortfall. So this would, I believe, that if it was passed soon, it may well even be reflected and corrected, and we'd be done with this in the February forecast. So thank you very much.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Senator Carlson for bringing this forward. This was the first bill that actually came to our committee, first bill that I had an opportunity to preside over, and he's done a wonderful job. Now, he took the DNR's advice here on working with them, and again, this is a vetoed bill from last year. We need this to move forward. There are some prospects out there, I understand, that are willing to sell some land, and with our acquisition going on different parts of government, we have to also be mindful to be selling those kinds of lands that we need to get rid of. So, and with that $6.4 million obligation we put on the DNR, we need to satisfy that, and we think this is going to help a lot. So I stand in support of this bill.
Secretary will give House File 55 third reading.
House File Number 55, relating to a bill for an act relating to state lands modifying stream easement acquisition provisions, third reading.
Further discussion on House File 55. Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam President. I too want to rise to thank Senator Carlson for bringing this forward. Early, there's a provision here which deals with Olmsted County transferring some parkland to the city of Orinoco. We had hoped to get that done last year. I would also acknowledge Senator Saxog, who had included in that bill last year, and a lot of this got bogged down, but bringing it forward now is helpful, and appreciate Senator Carlson for doing that, and certainly hope we have a good positive vote on this one.
Seeing no further discussion on House File 55, the Secretary will take the roll. all senators having voted who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to announcements of Senate interest, excuses for the day. Senators Torres Ray will be excused all day. Senator Fischbach excused from 12 to 12:15. Senator Gimsey from 12:30 to 12:45. Further announcements of senators, Senate interest. Senator Koch.
Madam President, seeing no other announcements, then I would move that we adjourn until Monday, February 28th, and members will start a little later, 11:15, to accommodate the budget forecast briefings. So I would move that we adjourn until Monday, February 28th at 11:15 a.m.
Senator Koch moves we adjourn until Monday, February 28th at 11:15. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed nay. We are adjourned.